her villa as an oblong of white through the optical viewer that sat on its tripod on the edge of the balcony. The city of Stirling was laid out before Feld in a grid of silver, with soaring towers rising to either side of the sky spire, like stalagmites of steel and glass. From here, the sheer scale and life of the city was apparent, and that such a vast conurbation had been built in so short a time was testament to the ingenuity and dedication of the people of Korhal. That it had been achieved in the face of rampant Confederate corruption made it all the more impressive. Feld loved Stirling. From here, he could see the green of the Marshall Field, the site of Korhal's establishment as a member planet of the Confederacy. That day had been filled with so much promise so many years ago, but now, as a parade ground for Confederate Marines, the Marshall Field served only as a bitter reminder of how bad things had become. Across from the Marshall Field was the Palatine Forum, home of the Korhal Senate. Its bronze roof shone like a beacon, shimmering like molten gold in the sunlight.
"Inspiring, isn't it?"
said Angus, appearing at Feld's side on the balcony.
"Reminds you what we're trying to achieve."
For a big man, Angus Menx could move silently when he wanted to. Feld hadn't heard him approach.
"Yeah, it's some view," agreed Feld.
"The jewel in the crown of the Confederacy, they call it."
"I've heard. And now you want to pluck that jewel."
"Right from under them," said Angus with a smile. "It's not their jewel to keep. Not any more."
"And what will we do if we win?" asked Feld.
"If we win," said Angus. "Don't you think we can defeat the Confederacy?"
"I don't care any more," said Feld, standing up straight and stretching his shoulder. "I just want to hurt them."
"Oh, we'll do that, my friend. Have no fear of that," promised Angus.
"You really think we can bring them down?"
"I do," Angus said, nodding. "I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't believe that. It may not happen in our lifetimes, but what we start here will be the beginning of something truly exceptional. Even a landslide has to start with a single pebble, eh?"
"That's true," conceded Feld.
"The influence of the Confederacy is spreading," continued Angus, warming to his theme as he always did when talking of his hatred of corruption. "But the people with the power to take action are the very ones who won't recognize that there's a terrible malignancy at the heart of that power."
"Why do you think that is? It must be obvious, surely."
"Of course it is. But recognizing the problem creates a moral obligation to then do something about it," said Angus. "And too many people have too vested an interest to take action."
"But not you."
"The old families and the council can make things difficult for me, yes, but all the Minx businesses are largely self-sufficient. We own every part of the process involved in my factories, from the hovercar plants to the AAI production lines. There's nowhere for them to squeeze us."
"Not legally."
"I've no doubt that the confeds will throw money at any number of pirate bands of mercenary troops to cause us trouble off-world, but we've come too far to give up now. Pretty soon we'll be able to do more than plant bombs or ambush lone squads of Marines. Soon, we'll be able to declare war."
Feld heard the unmistakable relish in Angus's tone, and wondered if the senator truly appreciated what was at stake in taking on the awesome power of the Confederacy. Lives had already been lost, and Confederate troops were cracking down hard all across Korhal. Early morning raids on those they suspected of terrorist activities were commonplace, and only Feld's rigorous insistence on watertight security and isolation among the various active cells had kept the integrity of the fledgling resistance movement intact. Though Korhal wasn't yet under anything that resembled martial law, it wouldn't take much to force the Confederates' hand.
Let's walk before we run, cautioned Feld. If we rush things, we risk losing everything.
You're right, of course, said Angus. But the moment is coming where the scales will start to tip, and if we don't act when it comes, we'll miss it. And it's coming soon, Acton. The guns and tech being brought in from Umoja makes us stronger every day. Our men are now almost as well equipped as the Marines.
That was true, reflected Feld. Every day shipments of industrial parts for the Mengsk factories came from Umoja via a number of dummy corporations and along circuitous freighter routes. Innocuously labeled and accompanied by all the correct documentation, these freighters' cargo containers were laden with the guns, ammunition, explosives, armor, and technology that allowed the Korhal freedom fighters to wreak havoc on the Confeds at the behest of Angus Mengsk. I never thought Alien Pasteur would come through like he has.
He's a good man, Alien, and not to be underestimated, said Angus. I've no doubt he's helping us more for the Umojan cause than our own, but I'll take whatever I can get.
He's still coming back for your close of session speech. Angus nodded.
Indeed. He and Juliana are returning to Korhal at the end of the week.
His daughter's coming? Said Feld, making no effort to hide his irritation.
That wasn't in the security briefs. It'll complicate things. Why wasn't I told?
I just heard this morning, said Angus, his tone neutral. Apparently my son has asked Aelin's daughter to accompany him to his graduation ball. And irritatingly, she has accepted.
Feld looked away, cursing Arcturus for adding this unnecessary burden to his already overworked security staff. In addition to the extra security measures he had instituted since the attack on the Summer Villa, Feld had assigned men to keep watch on each member of the Mengsk family. Catherine was relatively easy to protect, as she kept close to Angus, and Dorothy was escorted to and from her preschool playgroup. But Arcturus seemed to delight in making Feld's life difficult, and this was surely another of his schemes to test Feld's patience.
Great, said Feld. Another problem I could do without. As if you weren't making things difficult enough.
I know what you're gonna say, Acton, and the answer's still no.
Feld knew he was fighting a losing battle with Angus, but that didn't stop him from trying.
Look, said Feld, you need more guards when you make your walk to the Forum. You're too exposed, and if you don't let me put more men on the ground beside you, I can't guarantee your safety.
I told you, said Angus, his tone suggesting he was growing weary of having this argument. I won't walk to the Senate surrounded by armed soldiers. I can't look as though I'm traveling as a war leader. For now, I need to be seen as the voice of peace. But nothing, said Angus. That's the end of it. I've already consented to the ruinous cost of a personal force field, which I'm not happy about. But I will not be surrounded by soldiers. The Forum is a place of democracy and debate, and Lennox Craven will call me a tyrant or a usurper if I walk in with armed men at my back.
It's your funeral, said Feld. I'm just telling you what I think. Hey, I could have taken a cushy job on Brontes, getting paid a fortune to babysit rich kids, you know.
So why didn't you?
Feld sighed.
Hell, I'd have died of boredom, you know that.
You're a man of action, agreed Angus. And you are my friend, so it means a lot to me to know how worked up you're getting over my safety.
Just remember, that force field's going to give you only a few minutes protection, just enough to get you to the Forum.
Yes, so you've told me a dozen times already.
Feld shook his head with a rueful smile.
I still get paid if you die, right?
Honestly, Feld, I swear you're worse than my mother ever was.
She was a sensible woman, your mother, said Feld.
Bah! There's nothing to worry about, Feld, said Angus. You're jumping at ghosts, nothing more.
The press of bodies around the tables had eased now, and Arcturus lifted one of the pamphlets. An animated graphic of the Confederate flag billowed beneath the words, "The Confederate Marine Corps, a place for heroes." The two Marines who had stood immobile behind Captain Emelian circulated throughout the assembly hall, demonstrating aspects of their armor and allowing students to handle their AGR-14 gauze rifles. Arcturus replaced the pamphlet as the Marine recruiting sergeant loomed over the table. He could smell the polish of the brass on the man's uniform and the sweet, slightly sickly aroma of gun oil. The Marine's face was open and earnest, but devoid of any real personality.
"Thinking of joining up, son?" asked the man.
"Maybe," said Arcturus. "I haven't decided."
"It's an honorable profession, son," said the Marine, and Arcturus noticed the telltale bump of resocialization scars just above the neckline of his uniform's collar as he bent down.
"When did you enlist?" said Arcturus.
6 years ago, and never looked back," said the Marine automatically,
and Arcturus caught the whiff of words said by rote.
"Best decision I ever made, son, let me tell you. I've traveled all over the Koprulu sector, seen all kinds of worlds, and met me plenty of interesting folks."
"And killed them," finished Arcturus mischievously.
"Well, let's put that to one side just now," suggested the Marine. "What's your name, son?"
"Arcturus Minsk."
"Pleasure to make your acquaintance, Arcturus. Now, what do you need to think of are all the opportunities the Corps can offer you? Travel, self-respect, honor, discipline."
"Well, have you," interrupted Arcturus, "killed anyone, I mean?"
"See here, Arcturus," said the Marine Sergeant. "Being a Marine means you got to kill people sometimes, but only those as deserve it. When bad folks are trying to kill me or my buddies, it ain't no choice. When someone's got a gun pointed at you, well, there's only one thing you can do, right?"
"I suppose it depends on why they're pointing the gun at you," said Arcturus.
"Making trouble, are you, Minsk?"
said a voice behind him, and Arcturus recognized the supercilious tones of Principal Stegman.
"Not at all, sir," said Arcturus, turning on his heel. "Just finding out what I'd be getting into."
"A stint in the military would do you a power of good, Minsk," said Stegman. "Knock some of the smart-ass out of you. Bit of military discipline would soon sort you out."
"I wasn't aware I needed sorting out, sir."
Stegman leaned in close, and Arcturus had to resist the urge to cough at the overpowering reek of the man's aftershave.
"I know your type, Minsk," hissed Stegman. "If I had my way, I'd have you all drafted. A dose of military training is just what a boy needs to turn him into a man."
Before Stegman could press his point, a shadow fell over him, and Arcturus looked up into the face of Angelina Emelian. Up close, she was even more impressive, the bulk of her combat armor giving her an extra foot of height over Arcturus, who wasn't exactly small. She absolutely towered over Principal Stegman.
"And what unit did you serve with, Principal Stegman?" "Excuse me,"
Captain Emelian smiled sweetly, displaying perfect teeth and a perfect smile.
"I merely asked what unit you served with in your time with the military."
I haven't,
said Stegman. I mean, that is to say, I couldn't.
Arcturus bit his lip to hide his amusement at Stegman's discomfort and kept his eyes downcast. When he looked up, he saw Stegman staring at him, his face florid with embarrassment.
"'I wonder if I might have a word with Mr. Mangsk,' asked Emelian.
Stegman nodded curtly and all but fled from the marine captain.
"'I think I love you,' said Arcturus with a broad grin.
"'You wouldn't be the first,' returned Captain Emelian.
Arcturus watched Principal Stegman's departing back and said,
"'He's always made out he served in the military, but I'd always suspected he was lying. To be fair, he did apply to join the Colonial Fleet, but he failed the entrance exams and couldn't pass the physical. And between you and me, the physicals for the fleet are a cakewalk.
"'Well, thank you for sparing me from him, Captain,' said Arcturus.
"'Mr. Mangsk,'
said Emelian as he turned away.
"'Yes? I didn't save you from your principal's attentions out of the goodness of my heart. I do actually want to speak with you.'
"'Oh, well, of course,' said Arcturus, pleased the captain had singled him out. He could see his fellow students looking over with envious eyes and relished the attention being lavished upon him.
"'Thank you, Sergeant Devlin,'
said Emelian, addressing the marine still standing to attention behind Arcturus.
"'That will be all.'
The marine sergeant snapped a smart salute.
"'Yes, ma'am!'
With that, Captain Emelian strode off, her hands clasped behind her back, and Arcturus was forced to step lively to catch up with her. "'Do you always bring resocialized marines to recruitment drives?' asked Arcturus.
"'Most of the time,' said Emelian. "'They don't make great speakers, but they do a good job in giving the right answers to students' questions. "'So, what did he do?'
asked Arcturus.
"'Sergeant Devlin, what did he do?' "'I don't know,'
replied Emelian.
"'Those files are sealed. Once you're a Marine, resocialized or otherwise, your past life is irrelevant. You're a Marine, plain and simple. How very egalitarian, but I don't think that's entirely true, is it? No, it's not. But would you rather hear how he murdered his entire family with a butcher knife, or maybe that he enjoyed molesting small boys in the park?
I see your point, said Arcturus, looking over his shoulder at the bland face of Sergeant Devlin, and imagining it contorted with rage, a bloody knife in his hand.
The few, the proud, the psychotic, said Arcturus. You're trying to make fun of us, but it won't work, Arcturus,
said Emelian with a smile.
No? Why not? Because I already know you're thinking of joining up.
I am, said Arcturus.
And how would you know such a thing? I know more about you than you think. I've seen your test scores and read your psych profile. I know you have fine leadership skills and a confidence that makes people want to follow you. I know that you have a problem with authority figures you consider your inferiors and that your IQ is at the upper end of genius level. Those files are classified, said Arcturus,
more irritated at her spot-on assessment of his personality than at the violation of his privacy. He didn't like to be so easily read by others.
Yes, they are. But Principal Stegman allowed us to read up on his final year students before we came here today. Makes selecting likely candidates for recruitment much easier.
Isn't that against the law?
Almost certainly.
Arcturus was surprised at Emelian's easy admission and smiled as he realized why she'd allowed it.
You're trying to put me at ease by sharing a secret, he said. If you've read my psych profile, then you think I'll trust you more if I think you're being honest with me and appeal to my sense of rebelliousness.
Captain Emelian nodded.
Very good. Is it working?
A little, admitted Arcturus, enjoying the back and forth he was sharing with this attractive warrior woman.
So, tell me, Arcturus,
said Emelian, stopping at one of the sergeant's booths and lifting a handful of different flyers.
What do you want to do with yourself once you leave the academy? I was thinking of becoming a prospector, traveling to the fringe worlds and exploring the edge of space. There's planets there that even the Confederacy hasn't set foot on. I want to leave my mark on history, name a planet,
discover something no one's ever seen before. You know, the usual. A prospector, said Emelian. That's an honorable profession. Did you know the Corps can help you with that? Really? How? Most of our tours take place out on the fringe worlds. We deal with miners all the time. You'd be able to pick up some real first-hand experience dealing with mines, miners, and the like. Not to mention the training you'd get on your downtime. The further education facilities on our fleet ships are second to none, equipped with the very best in neural interface pneumo tutors. You could learn entire new skill sets while you slept. Sounds interesting, said Arcturus, surprised to find he was actually intrigued. You could do a lot worse than the Corps, said Emelian, handing him the flyer she'd picked up. With your test scores, you easily qualify for officer training. And once you've completed your basic service, you're free to leave if you want and use the skills you've learned in the military and apply them in civilian life. Ah, my basic service, said Arcturus. How long would that be? The Corps offers a range of flexible terms, said Emelian smoothly. It all depends on your circumstances and the current threat level as defined by High Command. And what's the current threat level? Emelian smiled. Low, she said.
Chapter 5 Graduation Day. Arcturus felt a nervous thrill of excitement coursing through him at the thought of finally escaping the confines of Sterling Academy. After the Marine Corps recruitment morning, Arcturus had found his thoughts returning more and more to the idea of joining up. He had even filled in the electronic application form, though he had not yet submitted it. The idea of learning the skills of a prospector while being paid by the Confederacy appealed to him, as did the idea that it would drive his father up the wall. And, given the current low level of threat in the Koprulu sector, it seemed likely that he would need to serve only a minimum of 3 years before he was eligible to resign his commission and begin his life as a prospector. Yes, the idea had its merits, but in the back of his mind, he couldn't shut out the idea that his life would be at risk, and Arcturus hated the idea of placing himself in physical danger. Wasn't that what the Marines were for? To keep danger away? He put the military from his mind and concentrated on the day at hand. He had enough to concentrate on without creating distractions. Sterling Academy was bathed in sunlight, the gray granite shining like marble and imparting a sense of modernity to the building. A wide stage had been set up on the lawn before the main portico, with row upon row of seats facing it. The 156 students of the senior year who were graduating, and that was all of them, for an institution of the stature of Sterling Academy did not allow its students to do anything so prosaic as fail, sat in these seats, dressed in long black capes edged with pale blue silk, and wearing mortarboard hats. Bleachers had been set up on either side of the seats in the center of the lawn, and proud parents sat watching their offspring finally graduate from school. Behind the lectern at which Principal Stegman handed out gold-edged scrolls containing diplomas sat the tutors and masters of the academy. Accompanying them were distinguished alumni of the academy, CEOs of major corporations, noted academics, patrons of the arts, senior Marine commanders, and even the chief of the Sterling Police Force. The principal of Sterling Academy was dressed in his full ceremonial robes of black and gold, complete with scarlet chasuble and tall conical hat, which made him look like a cockaded martinet, and Arcturus was sure he was concealing height augmenters beneath his robes. The school band played rousing tunes as the students walked toward the stage one by one and accepted their diploma from Stegman, to the hearty applause of their parents and the curt applause of those whose sons or daughters had already accepted their diplomas, or had yet to receive them. By virtue of his surname, Arcturus was in the middle of the list of names being called out by a lower school prefect, and he eagerly awaited his turn to take the walk to the stage. He glanced over at the bleachers, smiling as he saw his family watching with pride. Dorothy saw him looking and waved enthusiastically. His mother gave a more restrained wave, and even his father gave him a proud nod of acknowledgement. Sitting next to his father was Aileen Pasteur, and beside him was Juliana. It was the first time Arcturus had seen Juliana since the attack on the summer villa, and he was struck again by her stunning beauty. Aside from her being someone to write to, Arcturus hadn't thought of her much, but seeing her here in the flesh reminded him of the desire she had stirred in him upon their first meeting. The student next to him, a pan-brained moron by the name of Toby Mercurio, followed his gaze and said, "Who's the curve, Minsk? Sweet looker." Mercurio was from one of Sterling's nouveau riche families and had little in the way of breeding, still using slang imported from the gutter of Tarsonis. Despite that, Arcturus couldn't fault his conclusion. "Yes," agreed Arcturus, looking forward to the graduation ball that evening. "Sweet is exactly what she is. You taking her to the ball tonight?" "I am indeed, Toby." Arcturus tuned out Mercurio's nonsensical banter and concentrated on the names being called out. He smiled as he heard names beginning with K being called out. "Not long now." The K's didn't last too long, and Arcturus felt his heart rate flutter as his own name was called. He rose from his seat, glancing over his shoulder to where his family watched, and strode out into the aisle between the two rows of seats. The clapping of the students was somewhat muted, but Arcturus knew they would soon be changing their tune. He walked with his head held high, reaching the front of the stage and making his way to the steps at the side. The school photographer took a vid snap, and Arcturus lifted his gaze toward where he knew his mother and father would be recording the event on Holocam. Arcturus smiled for the photographer, then ascended the steps and walked casually across the stage to where Principal Stegman waited with a gold-rimmed diploma. Arcturus fixed his most ingratiating smile across his face and extended his hand to receive the scroll. It was traditional for the principal to congratulate a graduating student and wish him well in his future endeavors, but Arcturus had no illusions that Stegman would make any such gesture. He was not to be disappointed.
"You'll come to a rotten end, Minsk," said Stegman, handing him the diploma. "I can always tell the bad ones, and you're the worst of the lot."
Arcturus took the proffered scroll in his left hand and offered his right to Stegman, which, his being unwilling to appear ungracious before the parents and alumni, the principal shook.
"Thank you," said Arcturus. "I hope you enjoy your new residence."
Stegman's face registered confusion, but he quickly recovered and waved Arcturus off the stage. Arcturus swiftly made his way around the back of the seated students, holding his diploma up with a smile for his mother and father to see. Juliana was on her feet, clapping and staring at him with rapt adoration, and Arcturus smiled. He walked back to his seat and quickly fished his remote terminal console from within his coat pocket. Little more than a simple communications device with an optical reader, the console nevertheless had the capability to tap into computer networks remotely. So long as you had the connection key and authorization codes, you could get into pretty much any network without too much trouble. Arcturus quickly tapped in the codes for Stegman's console, long since having memorized the details from the many times he had been summoned to the principal's office and seen them entered in the mirror behind the idiot's desk. Numbers and letters flashed across the screen for several seconds until a small square appeared on the screen with a line of text beneath it. DNA verification required. Arcturus pressed a fingertip onto the optical reader, and a green light flashed on the screen. Identity confirmed. Isaac Stegman. He laid the console down on his knee and peeled off the thin, transparent coating he'd coated his right hand with before walking out onto the graduation field. The one-way biomimetic gel had been simplicity itself to create in the Academy's chem labs, and would disintegrate in the sunlight within a few moments now that he'd removed it. Arcturus picked up the console once more and opened Stegman's private directories. Using a linguistic algorithm based on a few well-chosen keywords, he quickly discovered the files he'd known he'd find.
"My God, he didn't even try and hide them," Arcturus laughed. "What's that?"
asked Toby Mercurio, sitting back down next to him with his diploma.
"You'll see," Arcturus said with a smile. "Just wait."
Quickly and methodically, he highlighted every file his algorithm had turned up, then set his console to scan the surrounding area for phones and other personal consoles. Hundreds of personal designations scrolled past on the screen, his father's and the SPF chief's amongst them, and Arcturus set the console to send the selected files to every one of them. Arcturus's finger hovered over the send icon, and he hesitated for the briefest second, savoring the moment.
"To the victor go the spoils," he whispered, and pressed send.
Angus rested his arms on the balcony of the sky spire as he stared out over the nighttime cityscape of Stirling. During the day, the view was impressive, but at night, it was something truly spectacular. An ocean of light spread across the hinterlands that sprawled from the mountains, a web of interconnected light that reflected on the underside of the clouds with a warm, golden glow. Despite the turmoil engulfing Korhal, the bombings, the unrest, and the Confederate crackdowns, being up here at night always brought Angus peace. Looking over the city from the balcony gave him a sense of perspective he often lacked when dealing with the minutiae of the life he had chosen. Sometimes it was good to step back from what you were doing and look at the larger picture. Yes, things were hard just now, but with every blow struck against the tyranny of the Confederacy, their hold on Korhal slipped a little further. Angus scratched a long-ago healed scar on his forearm, earned on a hunting trip with his father in the forests of Carish Province to the east, which had taught him that there was no more dangerous a beast than a cornered one. Actonfeld had called Korhal the jewel in the Confederate's crown, which was an apt description, and the council and the old families weren't going to give it up without a fight. Well, they were going to find out just how much the people of Korhal wanted them gone. Angus could feel his anger growing as he turned the many injustices inflicted upon the people of the Koprulu sector over in his mind. On Tirador 10, Confederate meddling and illegal financial dealings had caused the planetary economy to collapse, resulting in mass unemployment on a global scale. Only extensive loans, complete with ruinous rates of interest, and economic restructuring that placed the entire system in the hands of the old families, had prevented entire continents of people from starving to death. Another favorite tactic was to set up loss-leading businesses on the fringe worlds, where the old families' monopolies were not ironclad, to run local competitors out of business. Once any competition was eliminated, those same businesses would begin charging extortionate prices for basic necessities. While the use of corrupt business stratagems was the Confederacy's preferred modus operandi, the old families were not above using force to take what they wanted. A prospecting team from the Kalmorian Combine exploiting the Paladino Belt, an asteroid field containing huge mineral reserves within the larger rocks, had been eliminated when CMC forces launched an assault to capture its leader, a man apparently wanted for murder on Tarsonis. The deaths were described as a tragedy, but within days, a Confederate mining team was working the field, complete with Marine garrison and battle cruiser support. Hundreds of similar stories were the common currency of the Confederacy. Tales of greed, bribery, corruption, and nepotism told over a drink with a resigned shrug and a shake of the head. The injustice of it all screamed out for someone to fix the problem. But the scale of the Confederacy was such that no one could do anything. It was the way of things, said people. Angus Mengsk was going to prove that belief wrong. He did not relish the thought that he had brought violence to the streets and cities of Korhal, but he knew that it was the only way to wake people up to what was going on around them. Already things were beginning to change here. Angus was bringing the flagrant abuses of power perpetrated by the Confederacy to light, and the people were finally opening their eyes. And they did not like what they were seeing. When he watched a tale of misuse of power on the UNN, it was far away and thus easily forgotten. But when trouble hit close to home, it was harder to ignore. And when those misuses of power began to threaten your livelihood and the future of your family, even the most torpid of viewers would be forced to take a stand. Angus did not want power for himself, and he had no desire to replace the faceless, conscienceless council with a tyrant of his own making. No, when the Confederacy fell, he would become part of the process of creating a democratic government that sought to benefit all mankind, not one that served the will of one man. He sensed a presence behind him, and smiled as he caught the fragrance of Epiphany, his wife's perfume. Angus turned to see Catherine standing in the green dress of shimmering taffeta with navy bodice she had worn to Arcturus's graduation ceremony earlier that day.
"You look beautiful, Cat,"
said Angus, accepting one of the thin-stemmed wine glasses his wife carried.
"You've told me that already today, but don't let that stop you," Catherine smiled.
"Never," said Angus. "How did I ever convince you to marry me?"
"You didn't. I asked you, remember?"
Angus sipped his wine.
"I maneuvered you into a position where you had no choice."
"You keep on thinking that."
It was a familiar pantomime, one he and his wife often played out in the few moments they had together in private, away from prying eyes and the needs of business and revolution. Theirs had been a tempestuous courtship, for both were passionate, independent individuals who did not like to be overshadowed by another. But through it all, they had felt a shared need for companionship, recognizing that being one half of a couple could be as liberating as freedom. Their wedding had been the most glorious day of his life, and throughout their entire married life, they had been pillars of strength for one another, supporting each other through times of bliss and despair, and never wavering in their love. Catherine leaned her head on his shoulder, and Angus kissed the top of her head.
"Dorothy asleep?" he asked.
"Out like a light," said Catherine. "Today really took it out of her, bless her."
"I'm not surprised."
"Yes, it was quite a day, wasn't it?"
said Catherine, and Angus laughed so hard, tears rolled down his cheeks. When he had composed himself, he said,
"You always did have a knack for understatement, dear."
It had indeed been quite a day. A day that had seen his son finally graduate, and the principal of Sterling Academy hauled off to jail by a former student. When Angus's phone had trilled in his pocket, he had been irritated at the interruption of his son's graduation day, for he had left strict instructions with all his subordinates that he was not to be disturbed. Then he had heard a multitude of clicks, beeps, and whistles of hundreds of phones and personal consoles receiving incoming data streams. A ripple of consternation spread throughout the crowd, and Angus felt his stomach lurch as he saw that the originating signal belonged to Arcturus's console.
"Oh, God, what's he done now?"
Angus whispered as his phone's screen lit up and a number of files opened. His practiced eye quickly scanned the contents, and his anger built as he flipped through the various statements and account records.
"The thieving little bastard,"
hissed Angus, looking up and seeing that same anger on scores of other faces now staring in fury at the principal of Sterling Academy.
"I told you he was nothing more than a damn crook."
"Who?"
asked Catherine, puzzled at the suddenly tense atmosphere.
"Stegman,"
barked Angus, making Dorothy flinch.
"These are his private accounts. The little toad siphoned millions from the school treasury and fundraisers over the years."
People were getting to their feet now, an angry hubbub of voices cutting through the sound of the band and the shouted names of graduating students. On stage, Stegman looked puzzled and angry at the disruption, calling for quiet and order. But as an irate school governor marched over and thrust a portable console in front of him, his face blanched in horror as he realized what the entire audience had just read. Looking back over the day, Angus chuckled as he remembered Stegman's half-hearted attempts to calm the situation. Violence had been averted only by the chief of the SPFs hauling the principal away and bundling him into his ground car, to the uproarious cheers and applause of the entire student body. The news had traveled fast, for Arcturus had been thorough in his dissemination of Stegman's files, and, within the hour, the scandal was being reported on the UNN. Stegman was not connected to anyone of influence, and a great deal of the money he had stolen had come from some very wealthy, very powerful families. They would throw Stegman to the wolves, and the courts were sure to show him no mercy. In the aftermath of Stegman's arrest, the vice principal had tried to calm the situation, but gave up in the face of a horde of angry parents and jubilant students who cheered and hurled their mortarboards into the air. A near riot had only been avoided by the contagious glee of the students, who danced and laughed and sang as Stegman was driven away in disgrace. Recriminations and a thorough investigation of the depths of the principal's corruption were sure to follow. With Stegman's departure, the staff and parents milled around in confusion until the vice principal led them off into the main administration block like a marching mob, leaving the jubilant students to continue the party on the main lawn. Some of the academy's masters had wanted to cancel the graduation ball planned for the evening, but after the day's amusements, it was clear the students weren't going to allow this day of festivities to end so quickly. Now, with the day behind them, Angus and Catherine stood and drank wine as the architect of the day's mischief enjoyed his graduation ball.
"I should be angry at him," said Angus.
"Who?"
asked Catherine.
"Arcturus, who else?"
Catherine chuckled.
"I know, but it's hard to be angry with him for today. After all, he's graduated now, and you can't say Stegman didn't deserve what happened."
"Oh, he deserved it all right,"
agreed Angus with a smile,
"and to get his just deserts so publicly. I almost don't mind losing the money to have been there to see it."
Catherine leaned up and kissed him on the cheek.
"What was that for?"
"Do I need a reason to kiss my husband?"
"No, never."
Good. I'm proud of you, said Catherine. You know that, don't you?
Angus nodded.
I know that.
I'm proud of you both, you and Arcturus. You're very alike, you know.
Angus furrowed his brow and turned to face his wife.
The boy is willful.
He's his father's son,
Catherine pointed out, laughing. Angus grunted, unwilling to concede the point.
He has a fine mind and the capacity to achieve anything, and he wants to waste that talent on prospecting, flying around the fringe worlds, and associating with backwater hicks and Kelmorian pirates? It's no life for a Minsk. We're made for bigger and better things than that.
If I didn't know you better, I'd say that was arrogance speaking, said Catherine.
You know it's not, though,
countered Angus.
I know you see it, too. You've told the boy often enough that he can be great if he wants to be.
That's just it, isn't it? It has to be if he wants it. You should know by now, you can't make Arcturus do anything he doesn't want to. The more you try and force him down a path, the more he'll resist you.
Willful,
said Angus again, though his tone was mellow this time.
Just as you were, pointed out Catherine, until you met me.
Angus took a drink of wine and leaned down to kiss her.
Let's just hope that the women in his life are as wise and calm as you.
Catherine smiled at him, and Angus Manxk knew he was the luckiest man alive. The assembly hall had been transformed. On every other day, it was an austere, cold place of announcements. The news of sports results and dull speeches, but now it was a place of festivities. Hundreds of students filled the hall, drinking, dancing, and reveling in the sheer fun of the day. Of course, the only topic of conversation was Stegman's arrest and Arcturus's part in his downfall. Music pounded from the stage, colorful lights flashed from the ceiling, streamers trailed from every wall, and even the portraits had been hung with fake beards and noses. The ball's theme was Aliens from Another World, and a floating banner of light shone with the words, Class of 78, They Came from the Stars. Papier-mâché creatures of all descriptions hung from the roof beams on wires, reared from punch bowls, or emerged from lovingly detailed lairs set against the walls. The students' imaginations had run riot, and the past week had seen a frenzy of creation in the art classes. A carnival of grotesque creatures filled the assembly hall. Giant lizards, bulbous floating jellyfish with multiple eyes, snake-like creatures with whipping tails and tentacles for mouths. At the edge of the stage, shark-like creatures mingled with hairy, multi-legged spiders with long necks and terrifying mandibles. Arcturus knew the subject of alien life had been an obsession with mankind, ever since it had first looked up into the night sky in fear and wonder. Thus, the abject failure of the Confederacy's science and exploration vessels to find any sign of surviving intelligent alien life was a source of constant frustration to those who believed that the human race was not alone in the galaxy. Of course, a few explorers were said to have unearthed ancient ruins they claimed were the remnants of alien civilizations, but most people believed these to be elaborate hoaxes. Then there were the big insect creatures on Umoja, which had been domesticated by the people of that world, but they hardly counted as intelligent life. Even the band was dressed in alien costumes, made up with latex prosthetics to look like fearsome creatures with gnarled foreheads, long hair, and jagged, spiky armor. The effect was more comic than frightening, something Arcturus suspected was half the point. He normally detested such events, but had to admit he was enjoying himself immensely.
Perhaps he was still on a high from this afternoon's unmasking of Stegman's crimes. After all, it had been deeply satisfying to see the odious little man led away, and he had made sure the principal knew exactly who'd uncovered his crimes and destroyed his life. It might also have been due to the attractive girl on his arm, for Juliana Pasteur was, without fear of contradiction, the most beautiful creature in the room. But, if he was honest, Arcturus knew it was none of these things. It was the acclaim accorded him by his fellow students, and the near worship in which he was now held. His former status of pariah had been forgotten now that Stegman was gone, and Arcturus suddenly occupied a position more akin to a war hero. It was quite intoxicating.
"Arcturus,"
said Juliana as the volume of the music dropped.
"Hm?"
he said.
"You looked miles away,"
she said, offering him a glass of punch.
"Sorry,"
he said with a winning smile, accepting the glass as he returned his attention to the beautiful girl standing next to him. Juliana Pasteur wore an ankle-length gown of ivory silk with a velveteen bodice that hugged her budding figure and which accentuated her delicate features. Blonde hair spilled around her bare shoulders in golden ringlets, and a fine silver necklace set with a Eumogen sapphire hung down her neck. He took a sip of the punch and raised an eyebrow.
"There's alcohol in this?"
Juliana nodded.
"I saw some students emptying some bottles in earlier, but I don't think anyone's going to mind. Not after today."
"No," Arcturus grinned. "I suppose not." Juliana took his hand and smiled at him. Over the month they had corresponded, he had reveled in the power he seemed to have over her, but with her here next to him, he now fully appreciated the reality of what he had done. Everything in Juliana's body language told Arcturus that she had fallen for him, which was ridiculous given the few times they had actually met. Truth be told, he didn't know quite what to do with that, for while he liked her and found her engaging company, he certainly didn't reciprocate the strength of her feelings.
"Dance with me,"
said Juliana, as the band struck up the opening bars of a song with a more relaxed tempo that saw couples all over the room make their way to the dance floor. With no chaperones present, the students of Sterling Academy weren't about to waste this opportunity for some dancing that involved full-body contact.
"Dance?" said Arcturus.
"I don't think that..." Juliana took his drink from him before he could protest, then put her own down as well.
"That wasn't a request,"
she said, leading him onto the dance floor. Arcturus followed her, nervous at the prospect of making a fool of himself, but pleased at the attention he and Juliana were garnering. Arcturus had to admit they made an attractive couple, Juliana in her ivory gown, and he in his exquisitely cut tuxedo and golden cummerbund. The idea of kissing her leapt to the forefront of his mind, and suddenly the idea of dancing close to Juliana didn't seem nearly so bad. She turned to face him, holding up her arms.
"You do dance, don't you?"
"Not for a long time," he admitted, taking her left hand and placing his right hand on her hip. "My mother made me take lessons when I was young, in preparation for my entrance into society. I always hated them."
"Don't worry,"
promised Juliana, moving his hand to her backside.
"You'll be fine."
"I fear I may not be the dancer you hope for."
"Trust me, Arcturus, it'll all come back."
"Well, don't say I didn't warn you if I trample those expensive shoes." Juliana smiled, and they began to move in time with the music. Arcturus thought he'd forgotten the steps of those long-ago lessons, but sure enough, after his first faltering steps, he began to move with the music instead of against it. He and Juliana flowed naturally into the rhythm of their shared movement, and he felt like he'd just stepped out of dance class. A series of dancers spun past them, the girls offering compliments to Juliana on her outfit, and the boys hearty congratulations to Arcturus for having Stegman sent down.
"They really like you here," said Juliana, looking up at him. "You must be sad to leave."
Arcturus laughed and shook his head. "Not even a little bit," he said.
"Really? I think I'm going to be sad when I leave the Umoja Institute next year."
"That's because you are well-liked and don't have a troublesome, embarrassing father."
"Well, since you're so glad to get out of school, what are you going to do with yourself?"
Arcturus didn't answer at first, wondering how much he should tell her of his plans for the future, for she clearly wanted to be part of them.
"I still want to be a prospector," he said. "But I don't think that's what I'll do first."
"No? Then what?"
said Juliana, pressing herself closer to him.
"I think I might join the Marine Corps."
Juliana looked up sharply at him.
"The Marine Corps?"
"Yes, I think it would be good to have some military service on my record," said Arcturus.
Arcturus could see she was uncomfortable about his joining the Marines, but whether it was from any concern for his safety or through moral objections, he couldn't yet tell.
"What do you think?" he asked.
I'm not sure," said Juliana. "It sounds dangerous, but if it's what you want to do..."
"It's a stepping stone, nothing more," said Arcturus. "It's not like I plan to stay in the military. Once I'm done, I'll muster out and be a prospector just like I always planned."
"Your father won't like it."
"I don't give a damn if he likes it or not," snapped Arcturus. "It's my life, and I'll do what I want, not what he thinks I ought to do. I'll be 18 next week, and there's nothing he can do to stop me."
Juliana looked into his eyes, seeing the steely determination there, and nodded.
"Then I think it's wonderful. I just know you'll be the best soldier they've ever had."
Arcturus wanted to laugh at how easily Juliana had come around to his way of thinking, despite the anti-Confederate propaganda her father was no doubt feeding her.
"You'll be a general within 6 months," she said. "My hero."
Sensing a moment of opportunity, Arcturus let go of Juliana's hand and tilted her chin upward with a light touch of his fingertips. She guessed what he was doing and closed her eyes, her lips parting slightly as he leaned in. Their lips met, and they kissed. Juliana's skin was warm to the touch, and her lips were soft. She held him tightly, as though afraid to let him go, and the students closest to them cheered at the sight. Arcturus felt a surge of vindication at the sound, understanding exactly what it meant. It meant he could have anything he wanted. Chapter 6. Thousands of people lined Senator's Parade, the marble-paved street that led from the Marshall Field to the Palatine Forum. Their cheers were deafening, and Acton Feld had to concentrate to hear the updates from his men over the mic nestled in his ear. He had been awake since dawn, overseeing the last-minute preparations for Angus Menx's walk through the heart of the city. After the attack on the summer villa, Feld had increased security around the senator, but this had been the moment he had been dreading for weeks. Angus's natural disregard for any threats to his person had given Feld dozens of sleepless nights as he worried about Confederate assassins, lone nutcases, or simply a zealous supporter of Lennox Craven. To watch for such a threat, Feld had men spread throughout the crowd, equipped with detectors attuned to the spectral frequency of the alloys used in the ammo of slug throwers and spike pistols. That would detect the most common firearms, but he knew that if anyone in the crowd carried a more sophisticated weapon, it would need to be visually recognized. The atmosphere was electric, and the mood of the crowd was jubilant, which was something to be thankful for, as they awaited Angus's arrival. Today was the final day of the Corhall Senate's sitting for the year, and it was traditional for a senator chosen by popular acclaim to deliver the close of session speech. Ever since he had taken a stand against the tyranny of Confederate rule, it had been clear that it would be Angus Mengsk the people of Corhall would choose to deliver the speech. Feld looked along the length of Senator's Parade, steel barriers keeping the crowd from the road. Banners with Angus's name on them were held high alongside flags with the wolf head emblem of the Mengsk family crest. The route itself was clear, and the gleaming white structure of the forum shone like a beacon of light at its end. The roof blazed in the summer sunlight as though a fire, and even Feld had to admit that it was an impressive sight. All being well, Angus would walk through the great oaken doors of the forum and stand before the assembled senators and visiting planetary dignitaries to deliver his speech. And after that? Well, after that, the dynamic between Corhall and the Confederacy would be changed forever. Feld heard a double click in his earpiece and felt a jolt of adrenaline hit his system. Angus was on his way. Sure enough, Feld saw the silver 58 Terra Cougar as it pulled slowly around the curve of the road that led to where he awaited his employer and friend. The ground car moved slowly, and Feld silently willed it to hurry up as the noise of the crowd grew louder with word of Angus's arrival. At last the ground car pulled up, and Feld moved quickly to open the door. The door slid upward, and Angus Mengsk emerged from within, resplendent in his bright red toga. Angus stood tall, waving to the crowd, with his head held high, his smile warm and genuine. Catherine Mengsk followed him from the car, and Feld did a slow double take at the sight of her. She was dressed in a simple yet elegant dress of cornflower blue, her long dark hair bound up in a flattering style that brought out the classical lines of her cheekbones. Angus turned back and took Catherine's hand, but before he could walk to the end of Senator's Parade, Feld stepped close and said, "What the hell are you doing, Angus?"
"I'm walking toward the forum, Acton," said Angus through his smile. "What does it look like I'm doing?"
"It looks like you're blatantly disregarding the security plan we discussed. What is Catherine doing here? She was supposed to meet you at the forum."
"I didn't like that plan," said Angus. "Now get out of my way. I'm going to walk to the forum with my wife, and I don't want you next to me like a god dog at my heel."
"Do you want to get killed?" asked Feld. "Is that it?"
"Don't be ridiculous. Even the Confederacy wouldn't try anything today," scoffed Angus. "And we're both shielded by that force field of yours. Nothing's going to happen."
Feld stepped back and allowed Angus to walk past him, angry beyond words that the senator had so casually thrown out the security plan designed to keep him safe. Angus was probably right that nothing would happen today, but in Feld's experience, it was usually just at that moment, when you lowered your guard, that your enemies struck. Cursing Angus's need for dramatic gestures, Feld quickly broadcast an update on the security situation to his men in the crowd, and closed the ground car's door, thankful that Angus hadn't gone the whole hog and decided to bring Dorothy along. The vehicle would follow a discreet distance behind Angus in case a speedy exit was called for, and Feld just hoped it would not be needed. Setting off alongside the ground car, Feld scanned the crowd as Angus began his walk to the sounds of ecstatic cheers and howls of support. Every face was fixed on Angus and his glamorous wife. Any one of them
could be a potential threat, Feld knew. I should have taken that job on Brontus, he thought. Angus felt the mood of the people surging through him, and knew he'd made the right decision to bring Catherine along with him. He was just sorry he hadn't decided to ask his wife to bring Dorothy and Arcturus, but quickly discarded that thought. Bringing a child as young as little Dot to an event like this would be foolish. And Arcturus? Well, his son would never have agreed anyway. They had spoken little since the events of graduation day, his dealings with Aelin Pastur and preparations for today's events taking up the bulk of his time. In any case, Arcturus had been spending most of his time, since leaving the academy, with Pastur's daughter. The only real time Angus and his son had spoken had been yesterday at breakfast, where, despite his wife's warning glance, Angus had broached the subject of what Arcturus was planning on doing with his life.
"I haven't decided yet," said Arcturus, and Angus's political instincts sensed evasion.
"I could set up an interview with Nestor Jurgens," said Angus nonchalantly. "He runs one of my machine tooling factories in Fastens. He's a good man. You could learn a lot from him."
"What would I want to learn from a factory manager?" said Arcturus.
"Nestor's more than just a factory manager," replied Angus, irritated at his son's ingratitude. "All my managers effectively run their businesses autonomously. They're CEOs and financial managers all in one, though, of course, they answer to me. You're 18 now, and you'd learn the ropes of what it takes to succeed in the industrial marketplace and acquire the skills you'll need if you're going to succeed me."
"Succeed you?" spat Arcturus. "I have plans of my own."
"I thought you said you hadn't decided on what you wanted to do."
"Well, I have."
When Arcturus didn't continue, Angus sat back.
"Are you going to keep us all in suspense?"
"You'll find out," said Arcturus,
and Angus hadn't liked the sound of that one bit. After Arcturus's stunt at graduation day, Angus knew his son's mind could work in the most devious ways. Arcturus had excused himself from breakfast at that point, and only Dorothy spilling her cereal over the table had prevented Angus from going after him and demanding to know what was going on. Angus pushed thoughts of Arcturus from his mind as Catherine gave his hand the squeeze. He turned to her and kissed her cheek, and the crowd went wild. They walked along Senator's Parade, the shimmering whiteness of the forum drawing them ever onward. A tall figure in a red toga stood at the top of the steps, and Angus smiled as he recognized Lennox Craven, the senior consul of the Senate and the man who would formally welcome him.
"This must be killing him," said Angus, "having to welcome me in personally."
Catherine didn't need to ask who he meant, and smiled back.
"I'm sure it is, but I can't say I have any sympathy for him."
Angus heard the steel in her voice, knowing that Catherine believed with utter certainty that Craven had dispatched the men who had come to kill them in the summer villa. She was probably right, but without concrete proof, there would be no public accusations.
"I'm going to enjoy watching that bastard squirm," said Angus.
"Careful, dear," cautioned Catherine, waving to the crowd. "There are a dozen holocams on you, and it would be bad form if someone lip-read them."